as crossbows change the tempo of this battle and stepsons try to break the pattern of Chironia, a war that was never theirs to win. Arrows arcing, long spears thunking into flesh, men staggering backward, impaled, groaning. War then and now so similar but so different. Here today, the name and the work of the crossbow is death. None can stand before it. Arrows whiz by his head. Nico's horse jostles his, the stepson using his mount and shield to protect his commander. No need stealth. The god of the armies will surely see to his servant. Long, long spears glittering in sudden sunlight, some with iron points, some with bronze. On this battle plain clash professionals and raw recruits and civilians, every Theban and Macedonian soul caught dead or dreaming by Shamshi or Ascalon, and Tempest's greater sacred band. Nico crowds Tempest and his tros at every turn. Both horses' lower legs are hide-wrapped, to protect from swords and arrows. Stealth has his new composite crossbow, loaded and ready and bolt to spare. His black stud kicks out at the enemy troops with both hind feet and bares its teeth, dealing death wherever it can strike. Men and horses screaming, the living and the injured, the dreamers and the dreaming dead, men and ghosts indistinguishable, stricken, about to die, or about to die again. Some fall down cursing, struggling, bleeding, fighting back until the end, more dangerous when wounded than before. Some crumple silently when speared or skewered or sliced, fragile, hardly struggling, quickly bleeding out, easy to hack apart, but adding to the fog of war. Heads fall like apples in autumn on this battle plain, severed from their bodies, bouncing as they're kicked by horses' hooves, wide-eyed and staring at the sky as they roll in mud and blood. Now enemies surround Stealth, cutting him off from Tempest. Nico's new horse plants its left hind foot and pivots left, head down. Stealth has his sword out straight. Tempest sees the shock run up Nico's arm each time that blade connects with hostile flesh and bodies topple, jerking, then lie still. The black horse jumps three corpses, freshly made, and Nico is with Tempest once again, in time to raise his shield to meet his partners as arrows fly their way. And the black pushes and bites the tros, but Nico's shield is where it needs to be, when it needs to be there. A brace of arrows hit with a thudding trill. Some pierce and stick, some fall away. Nico slams that shield with its bristling arrows into an enemy running at them with a spear, knocking the spear away and the head away. Arrows splinter in the adversary's face and neck and on his armor. The black horse bumps his again, knocking the wind from both, pinning Nico's left leg and Tempest's right together. Tempest clears his own shield, scraping down it with his blade, pushes his own mount left to get some room to use his sword against new assailants, charging Nico from the ground. Calls a maneuver code, and Stealth turns in time. His sword arm arcs down, and the black horse kicks out sideways at hoplites who get too close. Above their heads the sky rolls and snaps. Purple haze hugs the ground, shrinking back. The sun breaks through the clouds, making every detail of the battle plain bright and clear. Alone the pair fights its way on horseback through endless foot, broken ranks in stark confusion. They thrust through routed soldiers, cleaving helmets in the press of far too many. Horses kicking, biting, blades swinging, blood spurting in close quarters, and he and Nico are still separated from their cadre by these opponents stumbling backward over their own dead and wounded, shoving one another, running from war horses, killing men upon their own. Their horses spin and kick and race through panicked ranks, leaving crushed and mangled bodies in their wake. Tempest sees no stepson now except his partner, up too close to him, eyes always scanning for spears come out of nowhere. Hears nothing but men yelling and horses squealing. He and Nico strike at enemies retreating and others coming on, keeping their horses' hooves off dropped swords and arrow points and bodies on the ground, as they try to find their cohort in the armored press. But you can't see far through the low-lying haze. Finally they break free on a hillock where no foes are charging and look around. Chaos rules this battlefield, where every kind of tactic meets terror run amok, where professionals fight amateurs and carnage results. Maneuvers carefully drilled, impossible to complete. Waves of death breaking on this simulacrum of the Chironian plain. So many falling, piled one upon the other. Bloody mud so slick that horses skid and stumble. And his stepsons, bright stepsons in the thick of it. Cavalry routing foot, stomping enemies into gory mud again and again. Such cavalry as this has never been before. Sinks third commando, 290 mounted fighters add their strength to the greater sacred band, trying their skill on Ascalon's living dreamers and his dreaming dead. From somewhere, Macedonian horsemen reinforce Ascalon's contingent. Those who struggle here again for another breath, another kill, another victory soon to be forgot. Is this what you, Storm God, really want yet again? Is this what you, Enlil, Lord Storm of the Armies, so long to see and see, yet again, and want, again and again, enough to let unholy battle rage against mere mortal fighters, and want enough that you will let effrontery win the day? Will you let your brave fighters die before an onslaught of dreamers and restless dead? No answer from Enlil, god of the battlefield, as spears rip and quarrels thunk and stepson cavalrymen lay about them with their swords against too many, with so much less to lose. The god won't speak to him today. Is too close today, perhaps too angry today, his celestial mind bloody and full of dark purpose. But the god's speed is in him, and he is Enlil's instrument. The god is so high in him, Enlil's mind in his mind strength beyond mortal comprehension. Now celestial rage is loosed. As Tempest looks up from the helmets and spears and swords flashing around him and sees so many more ranks coming, hoplites and peltasts, ferocious ghosts and dreamers never ending. Beside him, Nico seems tireless, grimly slashing, striking out at every armed and armored soul who might threaten his commander. Too many, enough to make the strongest tire. Yet Nico circles him, protects him, and guards him front and back, putting himself and his horse between Tempest and all harm with more strength than Tempest thought a man could muster. He sees the sweat running off Nico and his mount, sees the heavy breathing, the unflagging determination of his right man. With lance and shield and throwing star, then with sword and bow and arrow, as light cavalry rushes down upon them, stealth defends him. Nicodemus meets every assault, parrying every thrust, big black horse roaring between his legs and frothing. "So, Enlil, what do you think of my partner now?" The storm god says nothing, is just deep growling in his ears. "We could use a little help this day. Against endless troops and maddened fools, those with nothing left to lose come on like doom, uncaring, shields close together, long spears flashing in phalanxes and formations from a dozen wars. As on that other day he fought on this Chironian battle plain, Tempest can't say now where Tempest ends and Enlil begins. This time he must enlist the god. The lord of dream and shadow has gone too far, profaning souls who'd earned their rest, desecrating righteous battle. Tempest has a rage in him that threatens to tear heart from body, sinew from bone. Enlil crowds inside him now as he slashes about him once more with his god-given sword, always watching for Nico, who keeps putting that black horse in his path, trying to save him from everything and anything. Enlil now takes him over, this primordial force that sees so little difference between good and evil, right and wrong, but loves conflict and change and the steering of all things through all things by strife. And that force seeks the Dream Lord, who's reached too high and now must come out and face a god in man. Today, Tempest is surely more god than man, as Enlil takes his flesh and empowers it. It can't be helped, or maybe it will be the help. But the pattern of this battle is hard to break. Nico is consumed with keeping Tempest safe. His sword is like a scythe, his eyes stay steady, burning in the shadows of his helmet. Like all his stepsons, Nico knows more about how to use a horse in battle than those they face today. A throng of dreamers, eyes and mouths wide, comes at them like a wave, and Nico sinks his mount's pivot foot and spins the horse again. Short sword out, lopping heads from necks and slicing armored chests and limbs as the big black whirls in place. Beyond them sinks Third Commando Cavalry Fighter War, whose rules they wrote. Deadly strategies and tactics, fielded against heavy Macedonian horse, just learning what the Third Commando knows full well. It takes more than felted armor on the horses of this enemy to protect them from the Third's ruthless onslaught. Legs ruined, wounded horses drop on top of riders neighing. Even Tempest turns his face away. Critias and Stratton have the wings of the sacred band contingent, closing ranks upon a conscripted infantry with little stomach for this fight, slaughtering all those in between. Led by stepsons, the greater sacred band steps up to this terrifying battle, where the dishonored are dying in a multitude. Here on this transplanted Kyrenian battlefield, the spirit of Tempest's fighters is invoked, and their precision finely tuned. The Dream Lord's minions cannot be allowed to rout brains and heart and honor. Still the adversary marches in, where glory takes a shameful face and war an ugly turn, counting on sheer numbers to win the day. Long spears thunking into flesh, men stagger backward, falling, fleeing. Mortal strikes from dreamers' hands kill just as dead can be. Swords slash necks and arms. Randall gallops up, thin face pale and big ears flaming red on a conjured horse that is not quite a horse, but rears like a horse when the mage jerks its reins.
"Hitler!"
Randall shouts. "I begged, Sime, I pleaded. Notwithstanding, she says you must bring her the heart of Ascalon before she'll forgive you." With battle all around, Randall looks as if he'll weep. "Not your fault, Randall," Tempest calls from his cantering trace, circling Randall's conjured horse, striking at the dreaming dead getting between them, slash. "She sent the third commando," thrust. "That's good enough." Parry, slash. Too many enemies are surging toward them, trying to surround them where Randall has paused to speak.
"I tried, Commander,"
yells Randall as his mount, squealing like a real horse, leaps into the air and comes down kicking, crushing adversaries. Then runs the other way, while Randall, holding on for dear life, soars on his reins and fighters scatter. A unit of Macedonian cavalry, 8 abreast, thunders over the hill and redeploys into a flying wedge galloping through ranks of foot, unmindful that it tramples its own infantry, and is trapped there when its leaders fall and mills helplessly until men are pulled from horses and disappear into the fray. Nico squints at Randall, then at Tempest, shaking his head in disgust. His black mount strikes at enemies, its head snaking out to bite at nearby foes, as Nico closes up the distance between him and the Riddler, thrusting with his short sword at whatever fool comes near. No matter how Tempest and Nico try, they can't break this stubborn pattern. Shield-holding lines drift right, each man protecting his open side. Tempest calls Nico close. Too much interference from stealth is not helping as his right man tries to shield him from all jeopardy with his own body and his horse. Too many open sides, too much rightward drift among the sacred band. Too many hoplites and peltists ranged against them. A wall of shields and long spears is an unholy menace to men on horses. Spear points and edges sharp as blades can cut and maim and kill. Bronze butt caps hold long spears steady braced in the ground when cavalry charges. Horses bleed and men bleed more as a phalanx of Ascalon's foot bears down on them. Tempest and Nico race their mounts toward the enemy formation. These fighters won't run. This line won't break. Hoplites crouch. Shields touching, long spears overlapping, spear points bristling. Faster, then. Tempest signals to his right man they must count each stride, judge the distance perfectly before they ask their horses to make this leap.
They jump their mounts over the Dreamlord's array, hoping to come to Earth beyond the phalanx, not on top of shields and spear points. For a moment, they are floating. He hears shouts and clatter below, grunts and swearing beneath him as men attempt to turn in quarters far too tight, to reorient their line to face an enemy coming from behind. Too late. Clearing the hindmost rank, the Trosan, the Black land on open ground, neither horse stumbling into bodies, neither speared. Wheeling their mounts about, Tempest and Nico attacked the exposed rear of the enemy. Soldiers die, soldiers scatter, soldiers flee, straight into the waiting arms of the greater sacred band. Time to regroup. But Tempest can't see more than Nico and the black horse. Nico has his short sword in his hand. There are too many hostiles surging around them for his crossbow. When long spears imperil mounts and riders. Nico slashes faces, necks, and groins when he can. Breaking free, they race their mounts through ragged lines to smash them. Stabbing as they go. Living dreamers feel different than the dreaming dead when swords cut into them. The living shock and stop, the blades, flesh and bone holding fast before giving way, fighting back as best they can. The dreaming dead slice like butter, drop like stones. It's unnerving. It's meant to be. It's nerve that wins today. More of the Dreamlord's army crests the hill. New fighters field no strategy but overwhelming numbers. So, Enlil, will you take a hand or let the ungodly win this day? Ancient weapons, adze and blade, ancient helmets, more like the gods themselves had worn. These men deserved clean death long since. Tempest aches to give it to them each and every one. And the god in his head doesn't answer, but the god is within him, a greater heart than his own pounding in his breast. A crossbow bolt speeds toward him. His god-sharpened ears hear it moving through the air. Waka, waka, waka. He knows just where this quarrel is. He can feel it coming at him. See it with Enlil's sight. He reaches out his shield arm with god-given speed and plucks the quarrel from midair. Snaps it in two with his fingers and lets it fall. Enlil is bright within him on this battlefield today. The god-given sword in his right hand is glowing. Strength pours into Tempest. His battle is yet strong, and even with his god-given sight so keen, he cannot see the Dreamlord or Shamshi, the wizard boy, anywhere among this countless enemy.
Bring them to me, Enlil, or me and mine to them.
He must kill those two to end this conflict. No matter how he tries, he can't find them in the waves of conscripts from the archipelago of Dream. But he sees his stepsons, beleaguered, and his third commando, and his Theban sacred banders, and even Theban revenants, battling every comer, ghost or man, Macedonian, ancient soldier, dreamer, or dreaming dead. Meanwhile, Nico stays close beside him. His partner's right side is smeared with blood. It's trickling from a dozen superficial wounds, clotting fast. Nico doesn't seem to notice, caring only to protect him, to keep the spears at bay so the pattern can't complete. He finally yells to Stealth above the din,
"Nico, you can't step twice onto the same battle plane! Don't defend! Attack!"
black horse, rearing up, his right man salutes him with an empty stare, then brings the horse down, but doesn't try to speak over the cacophony. Just then, Nico takes a quarrel in his right arm. He's reaching over with his shield hand to pull out the bolt when Hoplite surge between him and Tempest. At that instant, from among the press, an infantryman with a war axe, whirling, charges Nico. A crazed attacker spinning between horses, spears, and arrows. The war axe connects hard, its edge throwing sparks as it skids down the bronze plates on Stealth's armor, slicing across his right hip and thigh into his horse's shoulder and its chest. The black horse screams. Nico winces and shudders at the concussion, knifing forward reflexively, grabbing his horse's neck for support. Blood spurts everywhere. His horse blares loudly, rearing, wheeling away from the axe, swinging through the air a second time. For too long, stepson and mount are silhouetted against the sky. Nico's shield arm and sword arm clasped around his horse's neck to keep his seat. Then he recovers his balance. Man and horse come down fighting. Enemy foot scatter from the onslaught of hooves and teeth. And blade. Not part of the pattern. God-given sword glowing in his hand, Tempest claps his legs against the tross and his gray leaps on the axe-wielder from behind. He cleaves the assailant's collarbone, then wrenches out his sword. The man stumbles and the tross is on him, pummeling him, crushing helmet and skull beneath its hooves. Tempest shakes out rein and lets the horse finish the sorely wounded man. The only mercy today is clean kill. The wounded on the ground cry out for death. Foot soldiers break and bleed and try to crawl away, but can't. Tempest hardly cares once the immediate danger to Nico is past. In time so distended that breaths come too far apart, he watches the blood well on Nico's hip and his horse's chest, and slow, then stays its flow completely, and start to clot. At least Harmony is giving Nico and his horse that much grace. Or Enlil is. The storm god of the armies succors his own today. Until they find the Dream Lord, Enlil's field blessing must be enough. Until this conflict ends. Until they can break the pattern. Until they can call the Dream Lord and the Wizard Boy out to battle. If they can.
Look to the souls of your soldiers, God, who labor in thine awful cause.
He hasn't come here to lose lives. He's come to save them. All of his, pitted against the angry dreamers and the dreaming dead.
Look to the souls of your own, Enlil.
He's said it before. He says it again in this battle that will not take a different turn, but must.
Must.
The sacred band of Thebes, valiant fighters all, are holding firm, each pair tight together while the enemy, so many, many, with gross force of numbers, seeks to overwhelm them. Charon had tried his best to inspire them coming onto the field of battle.
"I have faced worse at the hands of men," he'd told his faithful Thebans, not yet fully comprehending what was to come.
Said it with his son among them, and Lysis's young partner, Artan, at his side. Charon spies what he'd hoped not to see, and hoped most to see. Ghosts of his Theban brothers who'd died here when this fight was fought before. They'd lost this battle then. So many of his brothers massacred.
all but his precious few, rescued by the Riddler to fight on other days. So maybe they can win today. Against history, against the fate's intention. Foolish hope won't be banished. Snatch these brothers' souls away and take them home. How must he look to them, to his 254 foredoomed brothers? These fated dead. How must his men, his son saved from death, look to these souls recalled from Elysium or from Hades? He doesn't understand how this could happen, how their goddess could allow heroic souls to be profaned. But Tempest had said to him not to trust what he saw here. Their goddess Harmony had said they had all they needed to prevail here, and everybody knew it. So prevail they would, or some would. And some evil older than the gods themselves and darker than the deepest hell would be put to rout. Or not. If faith had been misplaced, then they would die here, as they had nearly died the last time Theban faced Macedonia at Chaeronea. Meet their fate here, a fate that Tempus and their goddess had conspired to forfend. But this was not the Chaeronea of Charon's memories. This was some other place, some nightmare. Charon sees a chariot, the first on the field today. Theagenes, their general, is driving toward Charon and his fighters. He wants to get to Theagenes, say something to this ghost, this revenant. As man or ghost, alive or dead, Theagenes has led them well for so very long. What can Charon say to them, to these shades of the sacred band of Thebes? He who has escaped death by Harmony's grace, without ever once needing to beg for mercy or besmirch his honor? He can say that his brothers are remembered. He can say the soul of the sacred band of Thebes is alive and well among the stepsons. He can say dead Thebans are revered by the living and their goddess. But is that really Theagenes, broad and strong? Is that Charon's own sacred band of Thebes around Theagenes, all 254? His blameless friends and comrades, the heroes of Chaeronea? What had they done to be snatched from Elysium and set down here? Whom do they fight for? The Riddler? What do they fight against? The Dream Lord? Sick at heart, demoralized, Charon looks back to his own fighters and beyond, where a wave of antagonists is advancing, loosing arrows and waving dories and sarissas, yelling like banshees. Then Theagenes gives a hand sign and the Theban revenants form up between Charon's little force and the assault of Macedonians, dreamers and the dreaming dead, braving a rain of arrows, ducking under shields, putting themselves in the way of ungodly harm. Charon's skin prickles. His breath comes fast as he calls his fighters to the ready. Now the dead heroes of Thebes are clearly defending their living brothers. Shoulder to shoulder, the revenants of Theagenes' fighters join forces with Charon's unit. The caterwauling is awful. The enemy closes. Wild eyes and gaping mouths and long spears attack in a bulging phalanx, then a wedge. But Charon has been through this before. He knows what to do, how to fight this enemy, this time. And he's on a horse, so much faster, so much more deadly with weapons and tactics he hadn't had before. He even has a crossbow in his hands, as there are crossbows in the hands of all his living sacred band. Crossbow bolts fly, speeding through the bloody press, short, sharp missiles of death, iron points piercing armor, skin, and bone. It feels good to fight back, to take the initiative, to break the pattern that had killed so many here before, when this battle last was joined. And they are holding their own, holding firm, advancing tight together on foot and horse, with their long-lamented brethren going on before up into the faces of the enemy. Marching forward till the walls made by their shields are all that separate one contingent from the other, each stabbing and pushing and slashing where they can. His cavalry at the rear is shooting arrows over precious heads that couldn't be saved before. Might they be saved this time? These ghosts, these truly fated dead? Karen flexes his fingers on his sword hilt, knocks away arrows with his shield without a thought. When Thebans fall who'd died before, he watches, awed, but they don't get up again. Don't fight again. They're not immortal. They only die once more, one atop the other, so many bleeding on one another, then disappear as if they'd never been here. Bled here, died here, a second time. The fated dead, the stepsons call Charon's remnant of the sacred band of Thebes. What would the stepsons call these vengeful ghosts once left for dead on the Chironian battle plain, who now fight again and die again and then vanish, bones and all, back to their shared grave under a stone lion for later men to find? So much more fated, for certain. Karen knees his horse and kicks it, heading for a knot of enemies needing to fight back and rend and take some just revenge. He's nearly snarling as he lays about him with his sword, striking at Macedonian heads and necks and arms raised against him, with sharp weapons glittering in every hand. No man should have to fight the same battle twice, so he won't. Tempus had told the senior staff, warned them all, fight a different way today. Now Charon sees another chariot coming, only the second one he's seen on this battlefield. This chariot has wheels with sharp axle blades that mow down allies and enemies alike, uncaring who is who. The edges on those wheels cut deep like scythes. He first saw this chariot the night before the Chironian battle when the Riddler drove it. Its image is etched deep into his soul. Up beside Karen comes Lysis, astride a big blue roan with Artan on his right, ducking arrows and knocking spears away from his father with ready shield. Lysis is intent on protecting both his father and his partner. He has time to wonder at his son. No boy now, but a man this day, and worthy, guiding horse and partner through the skirmish to his father's side. Time is slow today, waiting for death to pick and choose his way across this foretold battlefield. Whooshing, clashing, ring and bellow, death is all around. Karen has felt it before. He's been here before. Horses or no, crossbows or no, dead comrades or no, this pattern reasserts itself, resisting all attempts to change it, as if it were a living, knowing thing. Theagenes falls, struck down by a long spear, thrown, not thrust, and lies still, as he had lain before, jointed shaft a-quiver in his diaphragm.
His partner stands spread-legged over him, unwilling to move another step till death notices, and takes him, too, with a flight of arrows. Some strangeness in the proportion. The pattern from Chironea, repeating despite all they can do. Charon wants to cry. He's seen these two die before, divine friends until the end. He knows they might be hallucinations, not really here. Or revenants, not really men, but it rends his heart to see their pain and blood and valor once again. No man should die in battle twice, trying to protect his partner and failing twice. For an instant he can't see anything. His strength erodes. His fortitude leaves him. But then he notices his son once more. Feels Lysis's knee hit his own. Hears greaves clink and horses snorting. He has something most precious to protect here. His son and heir. A boy at risk, whose future is in hot dispute. And that realization shakes him from despair. For a heartbeat. In battle, a heartbeat can be as long as time itself. Break the pattern. Change the rules to change the game. The Riddler had counseled all his senior staff. So had the storm god Enlil devised this strategy? Change this pattern, break these rules of history, or fate snaps back like a slingshot. If the pattern holds, then predestination reigns. Tempus has warned him. And then all of his will die as they'd have died if Tempus and his stepsons had never intervened. Never plucked them from harm's way. He knows it for a fact. The Riddler had told him so, in his gentlest voice. But this was not exactly the Chironea of the Theban battle, he told himself. This was some darker, darker place. More like the Chironea of Charon's visions. And from what he'd heard of everyone else's. Many others had spoken of these flashes of the battle plain, purple and full of shadows like this battle plain today. Now Charon sees Tempus on his great gray horse that moves so fast they're both a blur, across this killing field of mud and blood and fighters locked in mortal combat. And sees Stealth, the commander's right man, an unearthly look on his face. Helmet off and dangling by his knee, hair plastered to his head with sweat. As Charon watches, transfixed, Chorus gallops up to him, enemies in hot pursuit strung out behind, drawing fire from the gauntlet of the fated dead of Thebes. "The commander says I'm to fight beside you till the end," yells the son of the storm god with a death's head grin, his face pale, his hip already bandaged. And Chorus slides his horse in line on Charon's right, between father and son because their commander ordered it. Because Charon has no partner. His son Lysis is paired with Artan, and should be protecting his own right man, not his father. Relief floods over Charon and strength returns. Trust in his cohort, trust in his commander to see them through this battle. His fighters need every advantage Tempus's stepsons can provide, and more. So Tempus has sent the son of the local storm god to fight by Charon's side, a benediction of the martial kind. Long spears ripping into flesh, men shoving forward, enraged, bawling. Charon is sure now this is not like the last time when long spears slew. Not the same pattern, not at all. Chorus catches his eye, reins his horse up even closer to Charon, and screams hoarsely,
My father Vashanka defends us. Hold firm and live to fight another day.
So speaks the child to the man when death is near. But boys can't comprehend death, a taste acquired through familiarity, a yoke to which every head some day bows. It won't be long now until the eerie quiet falls that signals victory for one, annihilation for the other. But it's not over, not yet. The sacred band has other plans today. Paired with Randall for this battle, Jihan is engaging the enemy from her troces back, dismayed at all she sees. She calls upon her father, Stormbringer, to strike the travesties dead from heaven this day. Randall chants his strongest incantations, does whatever he can do. But in heaven and on earth, and even in Jihan's oceanic realm, order is disturbed, unheeding. Something is wrong with the correspondences of earth and heaven today. On the unnatural battle plane, strife is here, bearing down with her awful mouth open wide, keening. Fear follows, stinking, her bowels loose and horrid. And death rides his own chariot, while disorder and a chaos flank him, shambling beside. Here panic reigns, speech is impossible, over the uproar. Jihan sees it all, what mortal men can see and what they can't with her froth daughter's eye. She sees Randall, who rides a horse that really isn't one. He's trying desperately to control it as it's overwhelmed by Ascalon's dreaming infantry. Jihan can't get to him fast enough. The conjured horse dissolves, and with it, Randall is lost to view, swallowed in the press of combat. Jihan fights off pikemen with her big troce horse and its flailing hooves. On its hind legs, Jihan's mount stalks among the enemy, while she and it cleave helmets, crush skulls, and strike down foes, where they may. Never before has Jihan seen such a test of heaven's mandate. She searches for Tempest. The Riddler is too far off to reach or even call. Above the noise of the dying and the arrows flying and the javelins whispering toward their targets. She sees Tempest reach out to stealth, touch Nico's shoulder, both reins in his left hand. Nico's shield comes up and Nico pulls his horse in front of his commander's, his black half falling against the troce, trying to block a long, long spear from Tempest's gut, and succeeding. What they all feared was a repeat of this deadly pattern. Nico had been adamant. He will stay with Tempest. All will try to change doom to triumph. And Stealth on that great black horse has sworn upon his life he will not fail. Now comes the Theban goddess, riding across the battlefield on a sable mare, seeing to her own. She seeks out the remnant of the sacred band of Thebes, these Theban-fated dead and truly dead, encircled by Tempest's own stepsons. Nearby, a whirlwind is forming. Jihan cries out to Tempest with her tidal voice, louder than any mortal could, trying to alert him. But his partner Nico sees it now, and Tempest heads his horse that way, toward the whirlwind. In that moment a chariot emerges from the throng of dreamers, Macedonians, Thebans, and other ghosts from battles past. Stepson maneuver codes ring out, called by Critias, by Stratton, and by Nico when he can. As soon as anyone sees that chariot, they're sworn to alert the others. Jian calls out again with all the voice she has. In response, the Dream Lord's minions focus on her, marching toward her, casting javelins before them, waving long spears as they come. But now the whirlwind is manifesting here. Two forces new to this battle plane are coalescing at once. Ascalon in his chariot, and this whirlwind, this shimmer and shiver in the fabric of creation that is a portal to Lemuria. Now, the pattern breaks. At last the foretold pattern crumbles, shreds its ethereal bonds. The pattern is blowing on the winds of change, picking up in mighty gusts, and remakes itself, begins anew, offering up a strained and strange proportion, a different fate not chosen by the Lord of Dream and Shadow. Jian can hear the differences in this war before she sees it. All sounds are louder. Men and horses move at their normal rates. She can smell blood and decomposing flesh and rot. She smells fear stinking across the battle plain, wafting over everyone into every nose. She evades a spear, dodges arrows, she lifts her horse into a lope and away from the tight press of spears and swords and conscripted dreamers. Ascalon's chariot makes a wide sweep, turning. Jian knows the Dream Lord when she sees him. The regent of the Seven Sphere is really here. The horses of his chariot trample restless dead and living indiscriminately. Mortals run from that dream-spawned chariot, yelling. Arrows rain upon it, but Ascalon waves aside shaft after shaft, driving his chariot one-handed. This is the hell-wheeled chariot Tempest once drove. Sharp blades stick out from each hub, and demons and the elder gods shine from its car. The chariot is pulled by two sable horses. Beside Ascalon in the car stands a tow-headed youth, handsome and tall, wearing a panoply that matches the chariot, with enameled serpents and gods and bulls and lightning decorating it. Jihan knows this panoply, once Nico's, as she knows the chariot which once belonged to her beloved Riddler. Fear oversweeps her, an unaccustomed emotion for a Froth daughter, child of wind and wave. Are Stealth and the Riddler dead, then? Defeated? She tastes panic for the first time ever. It clouds her mind as she struggles to think. Where is Randall? When confused or disheartened, Jian always seeks the little flop-eared mage. Jian looks for Randall and finds him not far away, on foot, among the skirmishers in the purple haze. Before Ascalon and his travesty, this wizard boy with such a taste for war, she and Randall are vulnerable themselves, alluring targets. Yet few of the dreaming dead accost her as she slips among them. She is female, no threat, they think, to such as they. Spears thunking, arrows whizzing, swords clanging. Jian sees the shimmer and the shiver of the whirlwind at the edge of her vision. Randall! She calls out for the mage in a voice as loud as a cyclone.
Jian!
Randall stumbles toward Jian, arms outstretched as if seeking salvation. Ascalon sees Jian, sees the mage, and points them out to the youth beside him in the car, who has a crossbow in his hands. Jian needs to get over there between Randall and the Dream Lord's chariot. She asks her mount, and it thunders across the battle plain. Time tries to reform itself, go back to the beginning of this battle once again. Jian won't let it. She fights to keep time moving forward. Her horse's hooves mark a cadence that goes onward, from past to future, and from one side of the battle plain to another. She won't be frozen in time by the Dream Lord and Shadow ever again, nor will anybody else here if she has her way. Jeon raises her hand and sends withering cold to the Dream Lord. Across the battle plain it speeds as if it were a flight of arrows made of ice and sleet and rain, and catches him and his bowmen and winds them around with the cold between the stars. The Dream Lord shivers, his partner beside him in the chariot freezes. Their horses halt in mid-stride for an instant. Reprieve for a moment. A reprieve long enough to protect Randall from Ascalon as the mage runs toward Jeon through the churning battle. Horses stomping, hooves flailing, swords swinging, quarrels flying, while the sacred band, stepsons, Theban remnants, third commando fighters, and fated dead and dreamers, are locked in deadly combat. Closer Randall runs, closer. Then Ascalon revives and touches the tow-headed youth. His team's hooves pound the ground. And a quarrel, glowing blue, speeds toward Randall, shot from the crossbow of the youth who is riding with the Dream Lord. The blue-tinged bolt hits the little mage in the back. Randall's arms outstretch, trying to reach for Jeon. His white face has a quizzical look upon it as he falls flat. Then battle rushes over him and Jeon can't see Randall anymore.
Randall, dear, sweet, brave Randall. Randall full of gentleness with iron beneath it.
Jeon wants to lament, but there is no time for mourning, not now. Ascalon has his arms upstretched, asking something of the universe that Jeon knows must be wrong. The purple haze drapes about him like a cloak. For a moment, Jeon stares around her at the tableau on the battle plain, shocked and sorrowful, unsure of her next move. Off to her right, with Karen leading them, the Theban sacred banders fight beside the pile of their dead brothers, lying just as they had lain before on this benighted battle plain. The Riddler's Thebans surround their slain companions, trying to protect the living and the dying. Far to her left, stepsons see Tempest and Nico coming and form up, trying to get to them. Critias signs a maneuver code to Stratton. Stratton has the ghost horse, and Ashad is riding up behind him, holding on to Strat's waist. Stratton heads his horse Crit's way. Arrows whizzing by, dropping from the sky like a black and awful sleet. Now Jeon notices that the Theban goddess is with her faithful, protecting them as best she can. Harmony touches her wounded with her soft hand, and the remaining Thebans come together over their dead. The Froth Daughter knows that look on Harmony's face. That expression has been on her own face enough times. The goddess wants to take her Thebans to safety, but this time, like last time, despite all, so few want to leave. Jeon sees a crossbow being aimed at her, a gray eye sighting in on her from the dream-forged chariot. She knows this enemy is Shamshi, the wizard boy, hoping to shoot her with an ensorcelled bolt as he had skewered poor Randall. She tries to rein her horse away, but not even her trose mare is fast enough to avoid that dream-sped arrow. She is struck between her breasts. The quarrel that hits her is tinged with blue. Sorceress, sent by the wizard boy. Her scale armor can't withstand this bolt, so sharp, loosed with such inhuman force. The arrow point touches flesh, and changes flesh to froth, to foam, to mist. From Froth came Jehan, daughter of wind and wave. Water is her element, to water